Her mother was a prostitute. Not the brightest of beginnings, no matter what era you're born into. We're not sure what the exact year of her birth was, either. It might have been 1773, or maybe 1775. No one knows for sure. But we do know something about her that's clear from all the evidence and stories that survive her. Betsy Bauer was smart, hopeful, and persistent. She wasn't about to let her circumstances hold her back, even if the odds were stacked against her. I'm not going to spoil it for you just yet, but let me say this. Betsy changed her life in a way few ever have, hyperbole intended. After working as a housekeeper for most of her childhood and adolescence, she vanished from public record, only to reappear again in New York City in 1803. Except she was a different person this time, having changed her name to Eliza Brown. She worked as an actress and was known for her striking beauty and quick wit. New York City had doubled in size between 1790 and 1800, which made it easy to disappear, to reinvent yourself, or to move forward without the baggage of your past to hold you back. Betsy, now Eliza, took full advantage of that. And then, she met a man. His name was Stephen Jumel, and he was a wealthy French wine merchant who had emigrated to America a few years before. There's a rumor that Eliza tricked him into marrying her, that she faked a terminal illness and requested marriage as a dying wish. Now, maybe that's just the story told by those who refuse to believe that a wealthy man could possibly fall in love with the poor daughter of a Providence, Rhode Island prostitute. Or perhaps it's the truth. Either way, the wedding happened, and Eliza and Stephen settled into their new life. In 1810, they bought a large mansion in the Washington Heights area of Manhattan and put down deep roots. The home, built in 1765 by British officer Roger Morris, had been used as a temporary headquarters for General George Washington during the American Revolution. The property included extensive orchards, a smokehouse, an ice house, and even a small vineyard of wine grapes. Perfect for a family whose fortune was tied to French wine. But that doesn't mean they didn't travel. Having a business that involved exporting wine from France meant that the couple went there from time to time, enough to have strong political views, in fact. It's said that the Jumels were such outspoken advocates of Napoleon that they would actually have political slogans painted on their carriages while they were there, sort of an early 19th century version of extreme political bumper stickers. It was actually enough to get them in trouble. She was kicked out of France in 1816 and again in 1822, while Stephen remained behind to run the business. Alone in Manhattan, Eliza set to work growing the family fortune. And it worked. By the time Stephen finally returned home in 1828, Eliza had become the richest woman in America. Their marriage didn't last long after his return, though. At the age of 70, Stephen Jumel died after a nasty fall. A fall that ended with him landing on a pitchfork. Assume what you want. That's half of history, after all. But we'd be fooling ourselves if we didn't find his accident at least a little bit suspicious. Eliza wasn't done yet, though. 8 months after her first husband's death, she remarried at the age of 59. He was an older man, someone she'd most likely known for years, and he had a reputation worthy of her own aspirations. Aaron Burr was a former vice president of the United States, after all, and the man who shot and killed Alexander Hamilton. But there was already trouble in paradise. Burr was broke, and once they married, he started to make moves on Eliza's hard-won fortune. So she filed for divorce in 1836. The day the divorce was granted, Aaron Burr died of a stroke at the home of a cousin on Staten Island. Oh, and her divorce attorney was the son of Alexander Hamilton. Naturally. Eliza Jumel died 30 years later, in 1865, at the age of 90. Or maybe it was 92. Again, it's all sort of foggy. But she left behind a fortune that people fought over for years. In 1904, the house was sold to the city, and they turned it into a museum. It's been that way ever since. Oh, and if you're ever in the southern portion of Highbridge Park and you happen to stumble upon some grapevines, stop and take note. Those are the descendants of the Jumel Vineyard, now wild and left to their own devices. Because some things refuse to slip away, no matter how much time has passed. And Eliza? Even though she's faded into the shadows of history, there are still traces of her, if you know where to look. She left her mark on every inch of her former mansion there in Washington Heights. Everyone who visits can sense it. Even the creator of Hamilton, Lin-Manuel Miranda, spent time there writing lyrics under her roof. One last story. In 1964, a group of children from a local school were visiting the museum, something that happens all the time. As the group was arriving and gathering in front of the old mansion, a woman stepped out on the balcony and shouted at the noisy children, telling them that her husband was sick and trying to sleep. And then she went back inside. The confused students told their teacher and the curator assigned to their tour, but the curator told them not to worry. The house was empty. No one had lived there for a century. He was even said to have pointed up to the balcony to point out the padlock on the doors. A short while later, they entered the front of the mansion and began their tour. And that's when some of the students panicked for the second time. They pointed toward one of the walls, where a large painting of an older woman hung for them to see. "That's her," one of them shouted. "That's the lady from the balcony." The painting, of course, was a portrait of Eliza Jumel. Maybe she hasn't slipped away after all.